I want to start by asking your thoughts on the budget vote expected this week. Back in 2013, you ended up voting for compromise, even though that wasn't exactly a popular position with some in the Republican base. How about this time around? Do you support the approach of making compromises to avoid another government shutdown?
You know, none of us want to be able to see a government shutdown. I think there are certainly some good things in the omnibus that they're putting forward, some that we do have issues with. Some positive issues, particularly for the West, are going to be included in the omnibus. We want to be supportive of keeping the government open, making sure that the needs of our communities are going to be addressed, and also giving our input where we think some of those dollars could be spent elsewhere.
So on to health care. You've been the focus of advocacy on all sides of the health insurance policy debate. The Grand Junction Sentinel reported in late March that you said if the American Health Care Act had come up for a vote, you would have voted no. Talk about where you stand right now on the current bill.
We have a couple of parameters that need to be included and make sure that we can verify these, make sure the pre-existing conditions are covered. We're cautiously optimistic right now. The bill is still being amended as we speak, but we do have included language in the bill right now that nothing in the act shall be construed as permitting health insurance providers to limit access to health care coverage for individuals with pre-existing conditions. Currently, it stands at a cumulative total of about $130 billion to be able to address pre-existing conditions, mental health care, opioid abuse, which is obviously impacting our district dramatically. The second point that we need to make sure that we're addressing is on the Medicaid side of the issue. Colorado chose to be able to expand Medicaid. We get 90 cents per dollar coming back for the expansion portion. People that were in traditional Medicaid, the state gets 47.5 cents approximately. Both need areas, and the idea now is to be able to per capita back to the state or block grant it back to the state, those same dollars with expansion allowed until 2020, and to be able to have the state make that option on the best way to be able to deliver those dollars for people in need. And then an area that is critical for us that isn't being talked a lot about. It's the people who are seeing premium increases going up double digit with high copays. We need to make sure that we're having the choice and the marketplace to where those premiums can actually go down and have programs that are going to fit the specific needs of the individuals. I think that we are actually fairly close in trying to be able to achieve those goals, but we are verifying that the information we're receiving and how it applies to our district is going to meet those three criteria.
You mentioned just now pre-existing conditions. What's your opinion about the idea of removing protections for Americans with pre-existing conditions and placing them in a different insurance pool? It seems like these high-risk pools almost always fail at the state level.
Actually, they had a good example in the state of Maine with what they call the invisible pool. They were actually able to cover the people. You never knew you were actually in the pool because the state of Maine was covering the difference between what would be a traditional policy and then the additional cost of a high-risk policy. That is a little bit of what we're actually trying to be able to promote in terms of legislation to move forward and to make sure that people are protected. We must protect every American. You may not have a pre-existing condition today, but at some point in your life, you will. It's just called age that will come up.
Well, let's talk about the opioid issue. Nearly $8 million coming to Colorado from the Department of Health and Human Services to combat opioid abuse. You've been very focused on this issue. How will this money be dispersed to the state and into our communities?
Tom Price, who is Secretary of Health and Human Services, announced it was a total grant of $485 million. Getting back to the states to be able to combat opioid abuse epidemics that we're seeing everywhere. Colorado is going to get $7.8 million under this grant. It's going to be able to get it back into our state, and something that we're fairly focused on, getting that local participation in terms of how those dollars can best be used to be able to facilitate treatment. We'll continue to hold roundtables around our district. This is a growing problem, and when we go back to the American Health Care Act, I do think it's important to note that $15 billion additional dollars was included in the American Health Care Act for mental health issues as well as opioid abuse as well. So this is a crisis that I think everyone is taking seriously on the nationwide level, and getting some of those resources out of the federal government back to our states to be able to implement programs that are going to be tailored to meet our individual communities.
So on the question of disbursement, is that still to be determined?
In terms of exactly how the state is going to be using those dollars, that'll be something that we'll be seeing at the state level. The additional monies that we're talking about will obviously be dependent in terms of legislation moving forward with the American Health Care Act.
All right, let's talk about National Monuments and the Antiquities Act, which is more than a century old. Donald Trump's executive order calls for a review of all national monuments created by Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton since 1996. As you know, this could affect the Canyons of the Ancients National Monument west of Cortez. You were a past board member of Mesa Verde National Park. I know you've spent a lot of time thinking about preservation as well as grazing, drilling, and other uses. When a Democrat was in the White House, you were very clear that you opposed the idea of the president making unilateral decisions about public lands. Now that your ally Donald Trump is in charge, has that position changed or has that stayed the same?
You know, we've always been very consistent. We've got beautiful public lands, and I've always been a strong advocate and will continue to be to keeping those public lands public. But I think that Congress does have a role to be able to play. The example, a bill that we were able to get through the House of Representatives with bipartisan support was in regards to the Chimney Rock National Monument.
Mm-hmm.
This is when the Democrats controlled the Senate. Our two senators were not able to get the bill through the United States Senate so that the president could sign it. As a result, he issued an order for the Antiquities Act implementation to designate the monument. There was broad public support. We believe that that's important, and also think it's important to make sure that Congress is involved and the people locally are involved in a designation process so that we have a better idea of what resources may be needed to fully implement any new monument designation, because it more than likely will increase traffic and visitation to an area, putting a strain on the resource. And that's where we need to be thoughtful in the process. If we just look at the Constitution, this is actually within the scope of Congress to participate. It's not adversarial. It's not anyone being against designation of monuments. It's just going through process. Let's have Congress involved, work with the president, be thoughtful about it before we proceed.
So a recent Durango Herald editorial stated that the president's characterization of the monuments as, quote, a massive federal land grab is wrong. The Herald writes that monuments have been established only on federally owned or controlled land. The Antiquities Act cannot be used to seize private or state lands. Plus, national monuments are less restrictive in many cases than national parks. The Canyons of the Ancients allow grazing and energy extraction, for example. So just specifically, what outcome would you be hoping for as Secretary of Interior Zinke sets out to review these national monuments at the direction of President Trump? What are you hoping to see?
You know, I think effectively Secretary Zinke, they're probably looking at from the standpoint that any designation through the Antiquities Act is to be in the smallest amount of area possible, and that's maybe a little bit more of their focus. The characterization that you were reading out of the editorial actually is accurate. These are already public lands. They are already protected from the standpoint that there is a regulatory framework in place in the BLM, in the Forest Service, and collaboratively, when we hold those hearings and we get the community input, in the case of the Canyon of the Ancients, to make sure that we have the inclusion of grazing, responsible resource development, those are good ways to be able to approach it. I think Secretary Zinke is probably going to be asking the questions as to whether or not those actual programs are working, and to make sure that we're having something that's working for all of the communities in the event of a designation. But again, I think this is something that is important, that we're thoughtful going into the process, have the legislative body, the local community participation that's going in, and then work with the president if we want to designate.
Congressman Scott Tipton, representing the 3rd District in Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for taking some time to speak with KD&K.
Great. Thanks a lot, Gavin. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.